Ohio seniors, it's time to make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Plans start at $0 per month and include $0 doctor visits and $0 generic prescription drugs. Visit medmutual.com/review or call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. MedMutual Advantage plans are HMO, HMO, POS, and PPO plans offered by Medical Mutual of Ohio with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in a MedMutual Advantage plan depends on contract renewal.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Greetings, everybody. This is a special episode of House Podcastica. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Lucy.
And we are going to be doing a special episode on our fallen characters from Season 8, Episode 3, The Long Night. Lucy, thank you so much for joining me today for this very sad episode.
It is my honor to be here.
So you weren't on Episode 3, obviously, but how are you enjoying the season so far?
Oh, I'm loving it. It's a lovely surprise as well, because we've gone so far without Game of Thrones. Every Sunday, I get this nice surprise where I'm like, oh, it's Game of Thrones night. Like, it feels really strange. Although, like you, I made the, I don't want to say mistake, but decision to see Endgame on the morning of the day of this episode, which I didn't figure out till I'd walked out of Endgame. And then I was like, oh, I'm about to watch a really emotional Game of Thrones episode this evening as well. This was poorly timed on my part, so it was an emotional Sunday.
Yeah, and then Derek also told me that there was that the latest issue of the Walking Dead comic was brutal as well. So it's not a good
weekend.
That. Oh, you did?
Yeah, I read that last night, and yeah, I think Derek and I might have to do a do an episode or something, Jason, because it's. There's a lot. Yeah, so it's been one of those weeks where, you know, hold your loved ones close.
it's a weird weekend for nerds, that's for sure.
It really is. There's a lot of stunned looking people walking around at the moment. But I have to say, I thought Game of Thrones blew Endgame out of the water.
I am of the same mind.
Yeah, and I think there were things in Endgame where I was just like, yeah, I'm not feeling it. Whereas this episode, I was like, wow. It felt like an hour and 20 minutes of A+, which was absolutely what was needed to do justice to this episode.
I loved both very, very much, Endgame and Game of Thrones. I, of course, am more invested in Game of Thrones. So the whole battle was wonderful, and it was so good to see a lot of these characters that we know and love so much getting a really nice conclusion. And I think that's a good place to start. Who do you want to talk about first?
Should we go kind of...
Want to go in order?
Yeah, that maybe makes sense, because that would bring us to my sweet prince, my favorite character, my hero, the man who I thought would take the Iron Throne, and that is, of course, Dolorous Edd, because damn, I love that man, or loved. It was a hard one for me to take. I had a lot of... my sweater in my mouth when I realized what was about to happen to poor old Ed.
So when did you realize he was a goner?
I had a feeling. I had a gut feeling, largely because I know when we did our first episode of this season and I was ripping Jason for liking Bran so much, he asked who my favorite character was and I was like, I don't know. And then I remembered it's Dolorous Edd and I thought, well, he's definitely dead. I think there was always going to be a loss from that three, from Jon, Sam and Edd. And I think logically it was going to be Edd, because there's no real purpose for the Night's Watch at the moment. I'm sure the Night's Watch will come back in some format and, you know, the wall will maybe be rebuilt for a different purpose. But it just seemed right that that would be a loss for this episode. And to see the three of them having gone from being those sort of awkward young boys that started at the wall together to being who they are now, and having that moment talking about Pip and the others who'd come before them, it was really heart-wrenching. And I hadn't appreciated till I watched it the second time that he says Sam's name just as he realizes what's happening. And oh, just so brutal. And then he got brought back and I was just like, no. So it was, yeah, it was.
I'm so glad all we saw was just his eyes opening, because I don't know if I could have handled it watching him rip people apart.
Absolutely not. Just no. He's just, I love Ed's pragmatism about things, and I like that he is, in a way, he's kind of, we spoke about this a bit on Deadcast this year about the need for sort of normal characters to balance out the superheroes, and I've always felt Ed is quite good for, he is just kind of an everyman. He's a bit grim, he's a bit pessimistic, he's not the brains like Sam, he's not the kind of knightly values of Jon Snow, but he's a good and true friend. He's a Hufflepuff. That's why I like Ed. I've just figured it out. He's a Hufflepuff. He's just and loyal and unafraid of toil, and that is why he will be missed, because he really is just one of those top guys who you would want on your team in those situations. So I was heartbroken to see him go. I just really felt for him in that moment. So that was, you know, everyone else is obviously upset about a lot of the other deaths, which I am too, but Ed was probably the deepest cut for me, because he's just one of those characters where I have an irrational like love for them. I'm just like, no, they're my character. I like them. I want them to do well. But, you know, with a name like Dolores Ed, it was never going to end well, really, was it? I think I'm saddest because I remember, I'll just list all the things I remember about Dolores Ed that I love. I remember when Sansa came back to, she arrives at the wall, first of all, doesn't she, to meet Jon? Mm-hmm. And then they take Winterfell back in the Battle of the Bastards. I remember there being a little bit of a kind of cute smile between Ed and Sansa, and he seemed really enamored with her. And I just thought, oh, she deserves this nice man, you know? But
yeah, when he apologized for the quality of the food.
Exactly.
He and goes, we're like, not known for our food or something. And she's like, it's fine.
And you can tell he's just a little bit smitten with her. And I just, yeah, I was always hoping that that might go somewhere, but there we go. That's how it ended for Ed. And it's probably, you know, with a lot of these deaths, I think it's how they would have wanted to go. But it was heartbreaking.
He saved his brother, yeah.
He saved his brother. I mean, I said before we started recording to Kristen that, like, I do, my logical brain is like, we should have had more deaths. My illogical brain, which is like the biggest part of me, is like, I don't care. This is going to be an amazing final three episodes. It's totally worth it. I'm glad that so many people were left standing. But I did kind of lean over to my partner at one point and say, I mean, Jamie's got one hand, Podrick's famously not a very good fighter, and Sam is literally just like hugging a corpse and crying by this point. So it does seem a bit weird that those are the three that have survived when, like, the Dothraki just got wiped out. So in that sense, I'm a bit like, oh yeah, we have Sam, cool. But Ed's still gone. But it's what Ed would have wanted. And Sam's obviously going to be really, is really important and is going to be really important to the storyline moving forward. And I think it's also a message about, you know, war and battle isn't logical, and it's not always the right people that die at the right points. It's, you know, sometimes the bravest soldier will be shot down in, you know, one fell swoop, while, you know, the cowards or the people who have different agendas will live longer for whatever reason. So yeah, it's, you know, it is what it is. But he was doing what he loved, exactly what you said. He was protecting his brother, and I'm glad Sam was with him.
Man, I was kind of the same way as you were when Ed died. It was the first sound that I had made since the episode had even started.
Right.
And my husband actually last night we watched the episode again last night. And he actually made fun of me after Ed died. He looked at me and he goes, because apparently that's the noise I made.
I think mine was, no, not Ed. And yeah, the peer was like, I think Ed's pretty dead, Lucy. I'm like, no, it was upsetting. But he was a good, in terms of the pacing of the episode, it was a good first death, because it was quite a blow. And it kind of reminded you that nobody was quite safe. And it sort of, I think it kicked you into the frame of, the stakes are high, people are going to die now. And in that sense, it was a good choice on the part of the storytellers to have it there. But it was still the just, and as well, the classic image, and comic book readers for The Walking Dead will appreciate this as well, the image of being kind of pierced through the eye, through the back of the head, and not knowing and not seeing what's about to come. That's just so shocking and so brutal. But it was quick, so I guess what more can you ask for?
Yeah, well, that he's still alive.
Yeah. I'm like, that my sweet but prince yeah, comes back to me. I just, you know, that hair, that beard, he had it, you know, he had the look. He had the piratey, Night's Watchy look that women like, what can I say?
He's such a good guy too, honestly. And I love what you had just said about the way that he was with Sansa, because that reminded me of the last conversation that he had with him and John, with John and Ed and Sam, all on the wall of Winterfell the night before the battle. And they were kind of ribbing Ed about being the only one that had never slept with a woman.
Yeah.
And it reminds you that, you know, as solid of a brother as he was, as great of a, you know, leader that he was of the watch and a good fighter, he was still really awkward around women.
He really was. He had the proper woman fear.
Right. So I don't know. I'm with you on that, though. Ed was a really, really tough one for me as well. He was that faithful friend, the last of the faithful friends of Gren and Pip and Ed.
Gren. Yeah, that was strange. I was like, is it Griff? And I'm like, no, it's Gren. Griff is a character from the video game. Yeah, Gren and Pip. Because that it reminded me of their deaths as well, because those were a huge loss when that happened up at the wall. That was a really striking image, you know, opening that the gate and seeing the two of them reciting their prayers just before the end came. And yeah, it sort of feels like that era of the story is done now. Like Ed, that kind of closed that chapter for me of the Night's Watch. And
that's a great way to put it, that that chapter has been closed, because I think that they're probably going to try and dismantle the wall at this point.
Yeah, it sort of serves no function now, really, doesn't it? It makes sense to maybe have like an army base up there, but yeah, I guess it's not really, you know, that time has passed now. The Night's Watch purpose is probably completely different. I think one of the things that's been interesting listening to people talk about it this week is, for some people, this is what the story has always been about, has been getting to this point with the White Walkers and with the Night King. And some other people are like, oh, this is just a stop on the way to the War of the Seven Kingdoms, which is where my kind of heart is invested. And I don't know where mine is. I kind of view them both as equal, but I don't know, part of me is a little sad that this wasn't the final battle, because I quite like everyone who's come together on this podcast, we all love zombies, so it kind of made sense in a way that this was the true danger. But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't take away from the next three episodes, and I'm sure that they will be brilliant as well. But yeah, for me, I think I was maybe more invested in the whites than I realized, which was quite surprising, because I hadn't really thought about it in that way before.
I am in agreement with you there. I really wanted this to be switched. I wanted it to be the Cersei battle first, and then end up with the Great War, just because I felt like we started, the opening shot of the whole series was a Great War, so I felt like it should have been ended that way. However, you know, I could see kind of why they're doing what they're doing, and I'm excited to see what happens next.
Absolutely, yeah. It does make sense in a lot of ways. And also, you know, this, it's like you said on the main podcast this week, Dany's lost everything. Mm-hmm. Like, she has lost a lot of men. She's lost a lot of manpower. She's lost, you know, one of her dragons is now gone entirely. But the other two both survived, right?
Yes.
Okay, good, because I really wasn't, was it Rhaegal got very badly kind of attacked?
We didn't see Rhaegal again, actually.
I was a little like, Rhaegal, Ghost, you okay, bro? I'm like, anyone?
The only reason why anybody knows that Ghost survived is because of somebody saw it in a quick shot of the upcoming sneak peek of next week, and they like took a screenshot and circled Ghost and said, here he is.
Yeah, someone, I think the one I saw said, Something like the good boy survives. I was watching it and I was like, I wonder if somebody, like, they got to the end of the season and they're like, damn, we haven't included Ghost in anything. We're just gonna have to go back and CGI him into all these scenes. So, like, he was never meant to be alongside Jorah.
I still will never know why he was with Jorah in the Dothraki, but whatever. If it were me being a showrunner, I would say put Ghost down in the crypts with
protect. Yeah, this is what makes me think they've sent some poor intern. They're like, you know, Joe, the intern, you're gonna have to put Ghost into some scenes because we just completely forgot that he exists. So. when in sitcoms, when they retcon somebody being into a scene or something and it's bad CGI in the corner, I'm like, maybe that's what they had to do with Ghost. But I am glad he survived. I don't think I could have coped with that and a dragon death. I think I would have just had to call it a night. I couldn't.
I was legit worried about Drogon at one point.
Oh, absolutely.
That was really rough.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was scary. The dragon stuff was pretty tense, to be honest. I was like, oh, what's gonna happen here?
Yeah, I agree. Talking about Gren, though, that kind of takes us into the next death, which was Lyanna Mormont.
Oh, whew.
And she died the way Gren died. She protected that wall. She protected further destruction by a giant.
Yeah,
in this case, it was a giant white.
Absolutely did. And it was testament to how good Bella Ramsey is that scene was so captivating. Because on the one hand, you've got a giant squeezing a little girl to death. On the other hand, it's Lyanna fucking Mormont. And she's going to go down stabbing that bastard in the eye. And I just thought, this is perfect. It's awful, but it's perfect for the character. And I think they spoke about this. I did watch an after the episode, which I don't usually do, and I think Benioff and Weiss spoke about the need for Lyanna to have a death that was worthy and satisfying. Mm-hmm. And I think they're totally right. I think it's interesting that that's basically the House of Mormont done.
Gone.
Now. Gone, isn't it? It's mm-hmm. it's been wiped out. So that was brutal. But I think in a way very fitting, given what Jeor Mormont did in being the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, that his house died protecting against that threat that he believed
That's
in.
That's beautiful. I didn't even think about that. Absolutely. And John still has Jor Mormont's sword.
Yeah, because I was thinking Jor Mormont in a weird way was quite present in this episode. In terms of, you know, Sam giving, is it Lightbringer that he gives to Jorah?
Heartsbane,
that's right. Oh, I'm so bad with the sword names. Like, character names, I'm just about their sword names. I'm like, it's Widowbreaker Whale, that one. But that was very much done by Sam as a tribute to Commander Mormont. And I think the more I think about it, I'm like, there was quite a, for that house to kind of come together at that point and to lose the last two members in the way that they did, it seems tragic but poetically quite right that would be something that would happen.
You know, it really shows their honor as well, just because, you know, Lyanna, when we first meet Lyanna Mormont, she tells Jon and Sansa that her mother died fighting for Robb at the Red Wedding.
Yes.
And for Lyanna and Jorah both to be fighting at Winterfell, you know, for humanity, but, you know, alongside the Starks, you know, that is a fitting way for the Mormonts to die out, only because they held their end of the deal until they completely were extinguished. I mean, you can't say that about the Glovers. I really hope that the Glovers are executed after this, to tell you that that's twice that they've abandoned the Starks.
Never trust a Glover.
Nope.
Like, just never trust them.
That should be their house words. Never trust.
Don't trust us. See you later. might come back later. What you up to?
we don't mean what we say. Fair weather house, friends.
House Glover, New Raven. Who this? Like. No, I think it's. Yeah, I suddenly realized. I was like, oh, that is, you know, because that's the kind of thing that happens in war. Like, there's during World War One and World War Two, but I think more World War One, there were like small villages in the UK and in Scotland in particular where like all of the young men would be sent in the same battalion to fight, and if that battalion was unfortunate enough to get bombed or attacked, you would wipe out a whole village of men. You know, you'd mm-hmm. be left with a small community that couldn't sustain the population. And it makes sense that there would be these tragic losses of full houses and members of them. And yeah, Lyanna just, she went out roaring though, which I think was just perfect for her. And she did not, I thought she was gone as soon as the giant swiped at her. I thought, you know, she's tiny, that's gonna have absolutely broken her. But she kept going and she kept going. And it was fantastic. And I was just like, this is right. And as with Ed, I'm glad we didn't see her fully reawoken, because I don't think I could have coped with it.
Yeah. You know, for a character that was only supposed to be there for one scene, she left a permanent mark on this series.
I think she did. And I think she really, on a bigger level as well, showed a point where the show's attitude to women really started to improve a lot, or had it kind of marked the watershed of the improvements that they made. Like, it was a strong, powerful female character, and it was showing kind of this next generation of strong women coming up, and I think that's really important. And it's come such a long way from some of the things we saw in season one in terms of the way that women and being a female at that point are depicted. Mm-hmm. And yeah, having Lyanna Mormont there was wonderful, not least because, like, sometimes in some shows it would be like, well, we've got Arya and we've got Brienne, we don't need another kind of, you know, warrior woman, we've already ticked that box. But this showed that there was integrity and
real leadership.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And just not being afraid to say fuck you to the people around you, and even calling Jon out on his bullshit as well. Lyanna, you know, I wish we could have seen more of you, but I think you got a fantastic ending.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, she also showed that the children can be really solid leaders. You know, when you look back at the show, you see Bran, when he had to be Lord of Winterfell, he relied very heavily on Maester Luwyn to help him because he didn't know what he was doing. Robin Arryn is useless.
Oh, God, that boy.
Ned Umber looked like he had no idea which way was what. Alys Karstark looked very confused as well, who we also lost in this episode, which, you know, we didn't get to really see, but we saw that she went into the Godswood at the beginning of the episode and Bran came out. That's about it. So, I think one of the greatest things that Lyanna Mormont brought to the show was the fact that you can be small, you can be a child, you can be a woman, and you can still be the head of a great house, and you can be good at it and solid with your word. Absolutely. And with your honor.
Even if you compare the way she commands the respect of people, even Theon didn't manage that with the Iron Islands until the very end. You know, mm-hmm. she commanded the respect of her men in a way that a lot of fully grown adult men couldn't, and that's impressive. And is Robin Arryn still at boading school? Like, what's his deal? Because the Knights
He's
of the
still
Vale
shooting arrows.
Yeah, because the Knights of the Vale stuck around, didn't they? Because let's face it, they didn't really care about Littlefinger. They were just like, oh, what a shame, I guess we'll stay.
They fought that battle. I saw a lot of their shields.
Yeah, so they're still on the go, but Robin is just, he wouldn't have been in that battle. So I'm just vaguely hoping that Robin might have died. But
maybe he died on the journey over.
he coughed too hard.
Yeah, right. They threw him in the lake with Rhaegar's rubies.
I love it.
So speaking of Theon, he's actually our next one.
Oh, Theon. I mean, this one was the least surprising.
Yes, absolutely.
I think it was just signposted. It was surprising, I think, insofar as Game of Thrones delivered on something it had signposted really heavily. Like, I was like, oh, it is as straightforward as this. Theon is going to die nobly defending Bran in Winterfell.
And he knew it. He knew it.
He knew it. Yep. That was a suicide mission for Theon, mm-hmm. I think.
He knew it was one way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, one way is definitely a better way of phrasing it than a suicide mission, I think, because he knew that that's what was going to happen. I did laugh ever so slightly when when Bran sort of said, thank you. I was like, I mean, yeah, okay.
or when he said, say? I'm going to go now. And I could just see Theon going, where the fuck are you going, man? I Theon's wheeled like, you here.
Theon's like, I have no right to be annoyed about this, but damn, that's annoying. Like, what are you doing? Where are you? Why are your eyes all weird? I thought it was a beautifully shot ending. And I think it showed how far Theon's character had come, because if that had been Theon even last season, he wouldn't have taken that run straight into the arms of death, but he did. And it was just very poetic and very well done. And yeah, Alfie Allen just delivers such a great performance.
I'd have to say that Alfie Allen is the most underestimated actor on Game of Thrones.
And I completely agree.
It kills me that he did such a magnificent job with the character of Theon Greyjoy that people don't even realize how amazing he really was. Peter Dinklage is amazing on this show, but if you look at the actors, I think that we did Alfie Allen a real disservice, or the Emmys or whatever did Alfie Allen a real disservice by not even nominating him alongside Peter Dinklage all these years.
Yeah, I think you're completely right. I mean, in the UK, I don't know if it's the same in the US. In the UK, there's definitely a bit of, not stigma about him, but when he got cast, it was very much like his dad is a famous comedian, Keith Allen, and his sister's obviously Lily Allen. Right. Yeah, Keith Allen was like a big comedian in the 70s, 80s. So everyone kind of knows Lily Allen and Alfie Allen as being his kids. So I think sometimes that makes people a little, not suspicious, but a bit like, all right, yeah, Keith Allen's kid, cool, he's doing this thing, or Lily Allen's brother, oh, that's funny.
Right.
But he did, I know that he took over from Daniel Radcliffe, I think, in Equus, which is a really hard play to do. It's like a very small scale show about a guy who has an unhealthy relationship with a horse, and it involves a lot of nudity. So I remember when Equus came out,
oh, yeah, because he has a penis.
Yeah. Back before Alfie Allen still has, when he still had a penis. Right. Sorry, Alfie, I'm sure you're listening. I remember people being really like, Alfie Allen was really good in this. Like, it really made his name as kind of a serious actor. But when it got to Game of Thrones, I think he was quite recognisable as being Alfie Allen. And yeah, it's funny, like, Lily Allen even wrote a song called Alfie about her little brother that she writes about in her biography as being like, I'm kind of sorry I did that, because I think it sort of followed him around a bit. And I think I think sometimes we don't appreciate performances of really painful experiences. And I think Theon is so traumatized and so broken that a lot of what Alfie Allen does is quite subtle, but even things like, I was watching him in this final battle, like his physicality, the way he carries himself has completely changed from season one, season two, Theon, and he's carried that trauma with him. And I like that Theon's never fully been like, I am fixed now, I have recovered from what happened to me and I'm a strong man. Like, he struggles all the time, he's struggling with it. And that's a really honest portrayal of what it's like to live through trauma and through great hardship. And I completely agree. I think Alfie Allen has just been a bit overlooked in that role. And I'm glad that Theon had this moment of kind of a proper sort of focused death scene, because I think his character deserved that for everything.
I completely agree with you on everything that you just said. I think that Sansa is going to probably take it pretty hard.
Their moment that they had
last season, what, broke me. I just thought it was absolutely beautiful.
It really was.
You could tell that these two people that have been through a very significant and horrible trauma together, they acknowledged that they had both come out of it and they were still together and they were still strong. And then when Bran said that everything that Theon did brought him back home, I thought that was beautifully said. And I think Jason on the podcast a couple days ago on this episode said that that was a very human moment for Bran. And I agree. His two interactions that he had with Bran were very, very human and very genuine. It's like Bran kind of bubbled up just even for a moment to forgive him.
I think he had to give him the strength to do what he was about to do. I think, I don't mean like Bran only did it so that Theon would go and get killed.
Right.
I just mean I think he needed that like human empathy and not the, I'm going to go now.
I'm going to go now. I got to go now. fly fly overhead and be a bird for a while.
It actually made me like respect Bran more. I'm like, I would love to just tap out of meetings. Like, I'm going to go now and then just walk out and not care.
It's like pressing mute on a conference call.
Yeah, like, you're like, I'm sorry, Theon, what's that? I'm doing something else now. Yeah, no, I think it was, and his stuff with Sansa was so, I was thinking about it and I could really have pictured him and Sansa marrying, and not in a like, and they would be perfectly healthy and healed way, but I think, yeah, Sansa's never gonna, you know, I think Sansa would be happy if she never encountered another man. Yeah, exactly, in her life. And Theon, obviously, we know, isn't kind of capable of that anymore. Equipped. And I was just like, actually, you know, that relationship could be very freeing for both of them because it takes away that sort of responsibility there. But after this episode, I'm starting to think Sansa and Tyrion might get married again, but that's
gosh, anyway, I hope so. Fine. Yeah, that's yeah. another, well, we could talk about that another time, but
yeah, absolutely. But yeah, for agree. Sansa to lose Theon was it will be a hard one. It really will. And I think he did the most redemptive shit one can do. Like, I mean, granted, the stuff he did was pretty awful, and I think with Theon sometimes we forget that he is dire in those seasons, you know, when he's left Winterfell and is trying to assert himself, and he's just this like confused wreck of a young man who just doesn't know what he's doing. But I would say, if anything, this, you know, makes up for that 10 times over, because he gives everything, and that's incredible. Mm-hmm. So he brings the honor back into his character there for sure.
When you think about Theon's character, how vile, like you said, how vile he was and everything that he did, you know, at some point somebody told him he had to choose whether he wanted to be a Greyjoy or a Stark, and it ruined him. It was his ultimate demise into Ramsay's captivity. And to go from, you know, a ward of the Starks to the Prince of the Iron Islands to you know, a tyrant, to a captive, to a eunuch, to a dog. When him and Sansa jumped the wall of Winterfell and they made their escape, and he was the one that killed Miranda to save Sansa, it's just that turn. And then he devoted the rest of his existence to making up for every wrong that he did. And you know, there's people that really hate him. There's people that say, you know what, I don't like the Greyjoys. I don't like Theon. And I get that. I was right there with you. But I was able to at least separate what he did with the trauma that he incurred while at Winterfell under Ramsay's imprisonment. And then what he had to endure as far as watching Sansa's wedding night, or giving Sansa away in Rob's clothing. And, you know, he lost fingers, he lost his manhood, he lost his identity, and then he claimed it back. And so often we see women that go through these same traumas and these same experiences, and they have to crawl back and they have to claim themselves and find out who they are after that. And I think that, you know, we forget that men can do that as well. And it was such a perfect portrayal of what Theon had gone through with Sansa. And even, at Winterfell, he was raised in Winterfell. He abandoned Winterfell. He was held captive at Winterfell. He escaped Winterfell. And he ultimately came back to defend Winterfell and die for Winterfell. And that's beautiful.
It's so beautiful. And I love his imperfection. That's the thing that I think, like, last season where he was paralyzed, he couldn't save Yara. He couldn't do it. I was like, to me, that makes him more human than if he'd suddenly been like, no, Euron, I'm going to stab you in the face now. Like, I'm like, no, he still struggles with it. But the important thing is he goes back. You know, he goes back and he gets her, and he goes back to Winterfell, and he keeps going and he keeps trying. And that's recovery, that's survival, that's, you know, that's the mark of who you are. It's not how mm-hmm. often you fall over, it's how often you get up and keep trying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the most important thing I think that he heard was when Jon told him that he didn't have to choose.
Absolutely. You know?
And I think that gave Theon permission to embrace who he really was. So
because his dad was a piece of work, like his dad was literally the worst. And you know, Yara wasn't great the first couple of times we met her.
Mm-mm.
Like, she's grown in some ways as a character, and that relationship has been more kind of fleshed out. But yeah, he gets a horrible reception when he goes back to the Iron Islands. He gets, you know, mocked and bullied by his father, and you just think, what chance did he have in some ways? I'm not excusing poor behavior based on upbringing, but with Theon, there is this bigger picture there that is, you know, a huge part of the tapestry of who his character is and was.
I'm going to miss him.
Me too. I really am. And I mean, I'm at peace with it, but I'll miss him. It's strange to think that we won't see him again.
Agreed. Well, another one that this one's my heart. I'm going to cry. This one's my hard one. Because the next one was Jorah that died.
Oh.
And I'm going to really, really miss him.
It's like the last thing Danny has, because he's been there. I was trying to explain it to Peter. I don't think I explained it very well, but he's the only one who's seen her through everything.
Yeah.
Like, he's seen her as this, like, timid kind of teenage girl. He's seen her in her relationship with Drogo. He's seen her at her lowest and at her highest. They've got one of the truest relationships because they understand each other, and she's forgiven him for things.
That's her family.
Yeah, he's more to her than Viserys ever was. You know, he's more to her than, in many ways, Drogo ever was. And I'm really, really sick of the friend zone jokes, because I just think, let their relationship be what it is.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of beautiful in its own way. It's not quite paternal, but it's not quite brotherly. It's a very pure kind of love on both sides. And I don't mean like he has this pure like fantasy of her. It's familial love.
It's family. And when you love somebody that unconditionally and that deeply, you know, your hurts are really deep, but your loves are even deeper. Your triumphs are even greater. And you know, he heard when we watched this last night, it dawned on me that Jorah was fighting. Excuse me. This one's really hard for me. Ugh.
That's okay. You take your time.
So he's fighting with, you know, Jaime and Brienne and Pod and everybody while they're trying to guard the wall, right? Of all the whites that were coming up. And he heard the dragons. And it dawns on me that he's been with the dragons their entire life.
Oh, he
and
knows his world.
He knows their cries. So I think he knew that Drogon's cry was a cry for help, was a cry that they were in distress, which is what snapped Jorah out of the wall. And that's why he went running in the direction of Daenerys. Because a lot of people say, how is it that Jorah just showed up out of nowhere? And I think that it was in that moment he heard their dragons, and he has been with them their entire... just as Daenerys knows the dragons as well as she does, so does Jorah. Jorah's the only other one that's there that has been there the whole time. Missandei has not. Grey Worm has not. But Jorah has.
So Jorah's like the dragon baby daddy.
Well,
it's really cute.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
But no, cute. You're totally right, though. You're totally right.
And when Jorah dies, Drogon comes down and encircles them. And
killed me.
I still I can't even think about it without breaking down. Between Daenerys's like deep, guttural, genuine cries, and then Drogon encircling them both, because Drogon also lost a family member in that moment.
He absolutely did. I mean, you can totally see where Jon Snow stands on Drogon's pecking order. He's right. Like, the glare I give you, Jon Snow, I'm really going to miss this guy, so you better watch yourself. But you're completely right. And it's that he encircles both of them, and you're so right. That's like, I hadn't really thought about Jorah as kind of the sort of stepfather of dragons, and now I am. And
I
love it.
He's another character, too, that had to kind of crawl his way back to redemption. You know, he made a series of horrible decisions in his early life and even his early experience with Daenerys. And, you know, I mean, I think it was probably, I forget because it's been so long since we've covered the first season, but I want to say that it was when the dragons were born that he completely devoted himself to Daenerys.
End of season one, when she walks out of that fire, I think you see a tangible shift in Jorah's character. Like, I think he's swithering before that. I think he can see something in her. But I think it's that moment where she shows, you know, this is the power I have, that wins him over. And that really convinces him of his gut feelings there.
And I think that if he had been honest with her that early and said, you know, I was supposed to do this, I was supposed to do that, but I am devoted to you and I just want you to know that before we go forward or whatever. But he didn't trust their relationship. And then we learn later he was right not to trust their relationship because Daenerys can be very unreasonable at times. But he went off, he was exiled, and he finds Tyrion Lannister. He brings Tyrion to Daenerys. He tries to claw his way back a couple of times. And then he goes to the Citadel to go try and get cured of fucking grayscale. Yep. And then he does. He does. And he goes back to her again. And they both have the, okay, this is water under the bridge. We're in a new era of our relationship. And the trust between the two of them, the closeness and the bond between Daenerys and Jorah is really felt in season Absolutely. 7 and this first part of season 8.
And you're so right about, you know, he didn't tell her at the start, which I don't think the relationship they had now would be as deep or as meaningful if he had. Like, that's the thing. I think they had to go through those kind of peaks and troughs of what happened and the things that occurred between them and things that were revealed to have the amazing kind of closeness that they have at the end. I think Jorah died doing exactly what he would have wanted to be doing, which is protecting his Khaleesi. I think like that is, if you ask me how will Jorah Mormont die, I think I would have described something pretty similar in a lot of ways, because that's who he is. He's that noble knight, that noble lord who wants to just protect the person he believes in most in the world. And that is, yeah, it's Jorah, isn't it?
There are a lot of people that say that they would die for someone else, but he is one of the only ones that follows through on it, that says, no, I mean, how many stabs did he take through his body before he finally fell?
Unreal. And he kept picking himself back up again. And it was just, and Emilia Clarke's reaction was that was some of the best stuff she's done. And I don't know if that's because she was really distraught because, you know, she and Ian Glenn are probably remarkably, you know, they've been working together for like the longest time. But her reaction was just so guttural. And for to see Daenerys so upset is quite striking, because she's very good at, she can be volatile and angry, but you don't see her grieving a lot. You know,
I don't think we've ever seen her cry, because that was the first time I've ever heard noises like that come out of her. And I mean, those were probably, that was the most heart-wrenching part of the whole thing, was just that high-pitched just sob that was coming out. Oh my God, there I go again.
It was just guttural, absolutely guttural. Like, you really believed the loss in that moment, because usually her emotions go towards anger or action, or like, I'm going to fucking burn a dude, or I'm going to, like, you know, I'm going to put your head on a spike. Like, yeah.
It's definitely fight and fight or flight.
Yeah.
Whereas this flight.
Oh my God. Sam is like, if Sam's an airline, he's so flight. He's just like, bye. Sam's checking out. Like,
see you guys.
I did laugh at the end. I didn't mean to laugh, but just Sam just sort of weeping. And I was just like, how has he not been killed? And I'm like, do you know, the whites probably looked at him and they're like, oh, do you know what? This is pitiful.
It's too easy. We'll come back to him easy. Later.
Let's go for Brienne instead. She looks hardcore. Right.
And that's another character that I think would die for Sansa, right? She would.
Brienne would.
She's somebody that would consider that to be the way that she would want to go out, is dying for Sansa, just like Jorah, except Jorah got to complete he got his death on his own terms. And he didn't fall until after until after the Night King had fallen.
Exactly. I believe he would have kept fight. I mean, I was jokingly, half jokingly saying about the knight in the Holy Grail who ends up with like no arms and no legs and still keeps fighting.
Flesh wound.
Yeah, I was like, I can see Jorah doing that. He's like, it's fine. I've lost both my arms, but it's fine. I'll just hit him with my head. Like, you know, he is.
Kick you to death.
Exactly. It's like his one purpose at that point is protecting Daenerys, who's, I mean, we'll probably skirt around the fact that she's woefully bad at sword fighting and someone probably should have covered that with her at some point. But if you've got a dragon, I suppose you don't think about these things, so whatever. But
she still held her own for having zero experience.
She did some good pointy end action, I have to say. She's definitely got the aspect. But I'm just imagining that moment where she's like, shit, no one's actually... Damn it. It's like that moment at work when you realize you're about to do something, but you skip that day of training. You're like, right. I didn't actually do Excel, so I don't actually know how to do this pivot table. So I'm just going to sit at the back.
I was planning on my dragon riding off without
me. Yeah. That moment when the Night King reveals himself and Daenerys is like, I did not think beyond this point.
Like, exactly. She's like, oh, you're actually here. Okay.
The Night King's just like, yeah. I'm like, oh. It's interesting.
She was stunningly beautiful in that sequence.
Oh, she and Jon, I mean, yeah, the two of them were just absolutely giving it their everything. It was the stuff of proper legend, like watching them. I was surprised we didn't see more Jon combat, but it paid off, I think, at the end when... You know, Arya, I'm talking like, I better not spoil it. I'm like, anyone who's listening to this has seen the episode.
Right, it was worth
it for the misdirection of Arya coming in at the last minute.
Absolutely.
It was so well earned. And Jorah just, you know, oh, we miss Beric.
Yeah, I know. I just wrote it down.
Yeah.
We're going to have to rewind the episode a little bit.
Beric,
let's talk about Beric, because Beric fulfilled his purpose as well.
Beric, actually, arguably this is a good point to talk about Beric, because he and Melisandre have quite similar storylines here, because they're kind of fulfilling purposes, and they're at that point in their storyline where the Lord of Light has taken them to this point, and this is actually the point that they were both waiting for. Did you read it as Beric knew what Arya was needed for? Or was he just acting on gut instinct, or,
so,
you know, how did that?
I guess what I did was, when I was thinking about this, was I recollected when him and John were talking in Beyond the Wall, and they spoke about being brought back by the Lord of Light, and Beric said, John said, I don't know why I've been brought back. I don't know for what purpose. And Beric said, we're not meant to live happy lives. We do have a purpose. We're never going to know what it is. We may never know what it is. And I'm not even sure Beric knew that that's what he had to do. You know what I mean? I think he died before he even heard Melisandre say, you know, his purpose has been fulfilled. But Beric probably died thinking, okay, well, clearly this is what I was supposed to do, because he lived beyond the wall and he lived through the Brotherhood without banners. And I mean, he was brought back so many times, and the way he died, I don't know. I keep thinking it was so obvious, like it was stylized as a sacrifice, because,
oh,
you know, 100%. He looked like he was on a cross.
Yeah.
You know?
The Christian imagery was strong, like in terms of resurrection and death and, yeah, no, I completely agree with you on that. It was very stylized in that kind of sacrificial way. It was, I like, so sometimes when I'm teaching, we talk about stories like Macbeth by Shakespeare, where like a character is told a prophecy and then they fulfill that prophecy. And you wonder, well, if they didn't know the prophecy and weren't trying to avoid it, would they have done what they did? And I think with Beric, I think it's really interesting to this idea that, you know, you're here for a purpose. But what purpose is it? And I wonder, there's just this nice poetry of the fact that Arya's kind of inspiring him and the Hound to keep fighting. You know, that bit where he says, tell that to her. Mm-hmm. And you look around and Arya's just going hell for leather, like absolutely battling her little heart out. I'm not saying, no, not little heart, screw that, battling her heart out. And it's this thing where I'm like, if he doesn't know that she's the person he's meant to be saving, the fact that she's inspiring him to keep going and to keep the hound going is so poetic and wonderful that that kind of feeds into it. Because it doesn't feel like he died for her. It feels like they were in a situation together that his sacrifice allowed her to go forward to the next bit.
Well, because the hound was able to get her out of that pile.
Yes.
And Beric created the barrier. And maybe it was him stretching his arms across the archway to be a physical barrier in that moment to get enough distance from the Whites and Arya. You know, maybe he did think that, you know, he sees this warrior and he sees that they're she's fighting with purpose, with a sense of purpose. And I don't know if she knew, if he knew that she was a faceless man. I don't know how many people know that in the story at this point. But it would be interesting to know what he did know. I don't know.
Yeah, it's. I always feel with the Lord of Light as well, a lot of it seems to be gut instinct. Like, you know, it's like Bran's vision. It's like, you know bits, but not everything. So, like, Melisandre has the basic clues to work out the story of Azor Ahai and who it needs, you know, who it needs to be. But she admits herself, she applies those clues wrong. She's like, you know, I came to the wrong conclusion. It wasn't Stannis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's interesting. So does he go on your gut instinct or these bits that you piece together? And I really felt Beric's loss, again, not a surprise, mm-hmm. but very appropriate for what was happening.
You know, that's interesting that you just said it that way, because I think that Beric lived his life with the idea that the Lord of Light had something in store for him and that there was a prophecy, but he didn't have to know it and he didn't have to act for it. Whereas Melisandre knew that she was there for a reason. She acted like she knew what it was and she knew the whole story. You know, her arrogance about her role in all of this was ultimately all of the mistakes that she made along the way. It was directly related to that. And Beric lived his lives with the idea that there is a purpose for whatever it is that he's doing, and he's just going to keep living his life as nobly and as honorably as he can. And when the Lord of Light is done with him and he served his purpose, then he will know that he served his purpose. So it's two different ways of looking at you know, power and the power that they get from the Lord of Light. And it wasn't until after she resurrected Jon Snow that I think she realized, I don't have to know the story. I don't have to know why I'm here or what I have to do. And to be honest, without Melisandre, a lot of this probably wouldn't have happened, or the outcome. I mean, lighting that trench was...
That was amazing.
Oh my gosh.
That was so cool. And I love that you saw her fear. I love that it wasn't just... Because I think Melisandre's thing, the first couple of episodes that she's in, she's a bit of a... bit of a kind of, is it a MacGuffin? You say something that fixes everything? Like, she's a bit like, I'm magic, this is what I do. You know, and we don't really get more depth than that, but it really appealed to me to see her struggle with her magic and feel that fear in those moments and there to be genuine tension. And they did it really well at the start as well when she came in and lit all the Dothraki
Arrakis
swords.
Yeah, Arrakis, yeah,
Because part of me was like, oh, Melisandre's here, it'll all be fine, she can just bring everyone back, you know, fine, we're sorted. But then when you see the Dothraki go and you're like, oh shit, no, oh, that's not actually maybe going to help so much. And then, yeah, that moment where you're like, light the trench, and then it lights and you're like, oh, thank god.
Yeah, that was terrifying. That was,
it was
terrifying.
So scary. And the way they shot it, you know, oh,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love the way that Grey Worm made it so that he could, that he had the idea to bring her out, you know, because they did make a point to settle on his face after she lit the Dothraki swords, that he saw that. And I think that that's something that he saw Melisandre and realized, okay, if they can't light the trench and Daenerys can't see the fact that the trench needs to be lit, that's his Hail Mary. And what a Hail Mary that was.
It was a Hail Melly.
Hail Melly. Hail Melly Sandra. Yeah,
Hail
very
Melisandre.
Nice.
She was great. I also, I just loved the way she was like to Davos, don't worry, Davos, you don't have to kill me. I'm going to be dead by morning. But then at the end, he's like, I'm just following you just in case. Are you, hang on, what are you doing?
Huh? Oh, he had what? His hand on his sword the whole time. Like, he's just been through the battle of his life where he only had one cut on his face. Did you notice that?
I was also, he was another one where I was like, relatively elderly Davos, who's very distracted, has not been injured. I'm like, interesting. But maybe he was just hiding out waiting for Melisandre. Maybe he was just following her the whole time. Like, oh, what are you doing? Oh, what's happening? I loved Melisandre kind of just walking off into the night, but I did laugh because I jokingly said just as she was walking, I'm like, oh, necklace is coming off, bet she's gonna get naked.
I said the same thing. I said the exact same thing. I said, well, she's gotta get naked one more time.
And then she did. I was like, well, she died as she lived. Like,
exactly.
Oh, but I kind of loved it. I loved this idea. Again, it feels like a chapter is coming to an end with the loss of her and Beric, because it also feels like Beric didn't have the power to bring people back, did he? It was Thoros that brought Beric back.
Yeah. Yeah.
It kind of feels like that safety net is gone now. And I know it's not like they just click their fingers and somebody comes back to life, but it is that sort of thing like, right, there's no second chances now. The Lord of Light has kind of done what he needs to do. The rest is up to humans, and that's really scary because some of the humans that they're going to be dealing with are a lot less reasonable than the Lord of Light. So
makes me wonder what Jon Snow's purpose is. I mean, was he resurrected to bring all of this together? Maybe, right? I don't know. I mean, I can't wait to see what happens in the next couple of episodes, but staying on Melisandre. Or wait, Melisandre or Beric? Beric,
kind of both. We kind of moved on to Melisandre.
That's true. Yeah, we did.
It's fine.
Watching her death was oddly satisfying.
Yes.
Not just because, you know, she was vile for what she did to Shireen, because I do think that she learned a valuable lesson out of that, and it did make her humble. But like you said, it did close that chapter. It said, this is over. We don't need Melisandre anymore. And the way that they shot it, the way that it was off in the distance and she just dropped in the snow, was gorgeous.
It was like, you hear stories about that with like pioneers and explorers. Like when things get really desperate, they're like, you know, I'm going out for a walk. I may be quite some time. And they just don't come back. And I kind of love that image of just sort of taking it upon yourself to be like, I'm done now. Because she must be tired. She's like a million years old. Like, you know, she's seen a lot.
Yeah, actually, with you saying that, every single character that died in this episode died on their own terms. They died, Ed died knowing that he was going to die saving. He got to save his brother. And if you were to ask him, how do you want to go out? It would probably be in honor of one of my brothers of the Night's Watch. Jorah died exactly the way that he wanted to die. Theon died defending his Winterfell exactly the way he wanted to. Lyanna Mormont died exactly the way that she wanted to go out.
Like a badass.
Yeah. Beric Dondarrion died knowing that he was saving Arya Stark, or he was, you know, fulfilling the Lord of Light's purpose. And Melisandre died exactly the way that she knew she was going to die. So it's interesting that when you look at the theme of death in this specific episode, that everybody died exactly the way that they should have, which often happen in this show.
I believe as well there were people who were, like, I think at that moment where Jon steps up to look at Viserion, I think Jon thinks he's going to die at that point. I think that's Jon's last stand.
I think he would have been okay with that.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think he's all ready to go at that point. I think he's like, may as well try. Like, and yeah, I think that's really unusual because a lot of Game of Thrones has been unjust deaths and people not dying when they're supposed to. And yeah, right from Ned, right through to the Red Wedding, through to the Viper. It's, you know, it's these deaths that are brutal and untimely and not right, because
heartbreaking.
Yeah, yes. Heartbreaking, exactly. Whereas these are bittersweet in a way, because, you know, exactly what we're saying, they're what people would have wanted to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's remarkable, mm-hmm, in a lot of ways.
I agree. We do have one more death, but, you know, it's more celebratory. It's the Night King.
Of course, R.I.P. Good. The Night King.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Night King.
Goodbye, sir.
Hashtag sorry, not sorry.
Hashtag bye. Like, it was incredible. It was perfect. I'm so happy that it played out how it did. There's a really good article on Vanity Fair by Joanna Robinson, who is one of the kind of big Game of Thrones critics, like one of the big critical voices around Game of Thrones, about the clues leading up to Arya and that moment. And there really are so many, including, and I think we spoke about, was it Remy phoned in about Arya's interest in one of the Targaryen ancestors, the woman ancestor, the dragon rider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now what was her name? It started with an N. I usually have it in my notes, but yes, she was one of the heads of the Dance of Dragons, the War of the Dance of Dragons, and she was a dragon rider, and she's Arya's hero.
Yes, and there's also this clip of Arya talking to Tywin when she's his cupbearer and correcting him and saying it wasn't Aegon, it was Aegon and his sisters, which is like super perfect now because Jon's Aegon and his sisters are actually being pretty fucking helpful at the moment. Well, cousins, but we'll gloss over that.
His cousins and
his aunt. I think Arya just, it was really well done. And I thought Arya was a goner in that moment. I was like, not Arya too! And I was like, oh, she's got the drop on him, quite literally. And it was just perfect. It was just so perfect. I loved it.
Yeah,
I was
a bit surprising.
Like, I was a bit like, Bran, did you know this the whole time?
Yeah, you know, I don't think that's ever been really clear on how much he sees as far as the future goes. I don't know that he does see the future. Maybe he gets feelings.
Well, you see that a little bit. I think it was in an article. I'm so sorry, I'm not attributing this well to whoever wrote it. There is a moment where he's handing that dagger to Arya, where he seems to look at it thoughtfully, and it's as though he knows it's important for some reason, but he can't quite put his finger on it. And he's like, this is yours. You should have this. And it's like a gut feeling. And obviously, you know, there's a huge poetic justice as well to it being that weapon, you know, the weapon that sort of started almost everything and now is the one that took down the Night King. It was brilliant. I think the one thing I'm sad about is, I feel like I still have unanswered questions about the Night King and Bran and that whole storyline. And I hope that the book series does get finished, and I hope that we get maybe some insight into that, because I don't think we're going to go back and retread it in the next three episodes. I think it's going to be forward motion. But there are just aspects of it that I want to know, you know, like what was the Night King's endgame once he got Bran? Would that have immediately killed him? You know, there's still things that I'm like, when I stop and think about them, I'm like, I wish I knew more. I wish I knew more about what was about to happen. Which I think is why I'm a bit like, oh, back to King's Landing, where everyone's just a dick. Like,
right. I know. I can't wait for the episode where we get to cover when Cersei dies. I used to want it to be Arya just because I felt like Arya needed that win. But she's gotten the ultimate win.
Arya can kick back and relax
for the rest of her life. She can hang her hat on what she just did. Absolutely.
I'm just picturing her with her feet up on the table and Sansa being like, have you done this? And she's like, no, I killed the Night King.
Killed the Night King, bitch. Where were you? Oh, yeah, the
crypt. Sansa's like, yeah, but I really need you to just do this. And she's like, nope, killed the Night King. She's like, it's been 20 years, Arya. Like, you need to stop using this as a reason for not doing housework. But yeah, no, I think it was, the death of the Night King was very well done. Very well done. And the music and the way it was shot was just perfect. And I hope Arya gets credit for it. Because I'm aware that the only witness is Bran, who may or may not have been checked out. I think he was in the moment at that point. He'd come back.
There is an article out there. I'll send it to you when we're done here. But there is an article out there that actually it goes over Jon helping Arya get into the Godswood.
Oh!
With So Viserion was guarding the entrance to the Godswood, which is why he was going a little crazy right there. And Jon stands up and he looks at Viserion and he says, "Go." And he screams out, "Go." And if you watch it again, he's screaming out, "Go." And in the very next shot after that, that's when the White Walker's hair flips up and they look over
that's
to the right.
So cool.
And then because, we see Arya like in the very next shot after that.
Because I did think Jon's scene there was a bit erratic. Not, it's not a criticism of the show, but I was a bit like, what's he, where's he, is he trying to, what's he doing? Like, and that would make so much sense.
Mm-hmm. Watch it again. Yeah, watch it again.
I will, with that in mind, because I think that, because they did such a good job of making us forget about Arya. I think, if I could ask, be so bold as to ask a question, who are you very surprised that we still have with us? Like, if you were to say there was one person who I thought was really gone and they're still here, and I'm not mad, I'm just like surprised.
Brienne.
Yeah.
I thought that she had got her knighthood, that she would die for Jaime or she would die for Sansa, or I thought we'd be talking about her right now. Absolutely.
Yeah. I thought Grey Worm. I really thought Grey Worm.
Interesting.
There were at least two moments where I was like, he's going to sacrifice himself. He's going to sacrifice. I really had a feeling it was going to be him. And so those, I agree. Brienne was another one where I was like, oh no. Mm-hmm. No. But yeah,
incidentally, nobody from that fireplace scene died. So Tyrion was right.
Oh shit,
he said, "I think we're going to live." And everybody's like, ha 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 ha. And it no, they
lived. Yeah, Tormund lived to fight another day as well, you know? Like, yeah, that's impressive actually.
Unless Jorah in that scene? No, Jorah wasn't in that scene.
Jorah wasn't. I feel like I saw a still that looked like Lyanna Mormont was there, but I don't. She wasn't there during the filming. Like, I don't remember seeing her.
No, she wasn't in that fireplace scene where they knighted Brienne.
I think Lyanna Mormont was probably having a hardcore party elsewhere.
somebody gave her milk. They said, "You have a big battle tomorrow. You have to go night night."
She's listening to like death metal in her room, like, yeah.
Westerosi death metal.
Absolutely. Sons of the Harpy.
New band name, I call it Sons of the Harpy.
I would listen to that.
That's amazing. We do have a few comments. Okay, so Lindsay Schlitt says, "You know what I liked most about the deaths? Jorah, Ed, and Beric all died in the arms of someone or looking into another person's eyes while they all looked like they wanted to say something. None of them did. It's very Hollywood to have heartbreaking final words, and they didn't go there. It makes it even more sad and more real."
Well, I didn't want feelings today, so the fact that you've hurt them and broken my heart is irrelevant, so I'm not going to say anything. That's really, really heartbreaking. It's so true. Leslie Beach says, "I was very moved by the death of Theon Greyjoy. He has had such a complete character arc from the beginning. In season one, he was the cocky know-it-all, teasing Bran and being a jerk to Jon. His character evolved from that to Ramsay's punching bag, finally to the man this season. I feel like he would have made Ned Stark proud with the honour and bravery he showed protecting Bran. Even at the last moment challenging the Night King when he had to know he'd surely die, he charged. R.I.P. Theon."
Absolutely. Ugh. Ouch. Mark McBurney says, "Lyanna Mormont, the littlest of warriors who slay the biggest of giants, was Game of Thrones' version of David versus Goliath, and it was epic. It's just a shame that she didn't kill a few big names when she was a white."
True that.
I could not have handled it if she had done that, though. I would have been heartbroken.
How confusing would that be? Imagine she like takes down Brienne or something. I'd be like, I don't know what to feel.
Stop it.
Feminism? Like. Robin Springer says, "We all love the big main characters that the story revolves around and hinges on, the ones who develop the action. But for my money, the secondary characters like Dolorous Ed really make the show." Yes, Robin. "The actors and characters like him, Pip, Gren, Old Nan, Osha, the woman from Hard Home, etc. fill in the world with such humanity, humour, grace and memorable lines and moments. They are my favourite part of the show. I cried out, oh no, when Ed died saving Sam. The Night's Watch was full of thieves, murderers, and rapers, but so many of them died gallant deaths. I'll miss Ed. Me too, Robin.
Me too, Robin. We're all very sweet sad kids. About it. Steve Brown, because you can't get Steve. Through. Can't get through any of this without hashtag We Are Steve.
We are Steve.
Every rewatch I cry at Danny's response to Jorah's death. He was the character that I identified most with in the show. Yeah, he had a tough time. You haven't listened to the whole thing, right? You're only...
I'm about half of the way through, I think.
So Steve actually broke down a little in his voicemail.
Oh, Steve!
Which, you know, made me want to just die on the inside.
Oh, Steve, we've put you through so much. Like, every day when I wake up and I'm traumatized by Game of Thrones, I think of Steve and I pull through. I'm like, no, man, not today.
Like, what do we say to the god of death?
We are Steve.
Steve,
yeah. Steve, you're there, man. You've got this. We got you, man. It's going to be fine.
You're going to be great, buddy.
It's going to be good. I mean, it's probably not going to be fine, but you'll be fine. And that's important.
Yeah. So that's going to do it for our death episode. So if you guys like these little added bonus episodes, please let us know. And I'll make sure to try and get one in between each of our episode coverages, just so we could kind of just take a moment and really, really pay homage to the characters that we've been with for so long. You know, people like Jorah, Theon, and Dolores Ed, I think that we've all really just, they've become kind of the fabric of Game of Thrones. And to lose these characters in such big and magnificent ways at the end of the show, I think deserves just a little extra conversation and just a little tip of the hat from us.
Completely. So. I completely agree. It's such a good idea, Kristen. I wish we didn't need to have them, but let's face it, we're going to need to have them. So
yeah, it helps me. It helps me process a little bit too.
Exactly. You know? I think it's a really nice thing to do. And when you're dealing in a weekly podcast with such huge episodes, it's hard to cover the ground and the character tributes and all the things. So I think this is a good idea for sure.
Yeah, well, hopefully we don't have one that has like 6 or 7 deaths again. But we'll
just
see.
Mutual weeping. Yeah, it'll be fine.
We'll see who dies of their long night wounds.
Yes, or the cold. I mean, things get, you know, someone might get, like, I don't know, scarlet fever. You never know. It might just be, that's like how Jon Snow dies.
I'd like it if Bronn died next week when he arrives at Winterfell and we're like, bitch, where were you?
He's like, I got the pox now. You're like, yeah, whatever.
So this weekend we will be covering season 8, episode 4, TBA title. I think it's another hour and a half or 80-minute episode. So they're all very long from here on out. Yes. Oh, thank you so much, Lucy, for jumping on and doing this with me. I always enjoy podcasting with you.
Oh, you too, girl. This is always a highlight of my week. So I went, you know, it's like being at a funeral. I'm like, it's tragic circumstances, but it was lovely to see you. Like, you know, we mustn't keep meeting like this.
I know, but I love it. I love every second of it. So I'm glad that you were able to be a part of it.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So that'll do it for us on this special episode of House Podcastica. Take care, and we will see you next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio seniors, it's time to make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Plans start at $0 per month and include $0 doctor visits and $0 generic prescription drugs. Visit medmutual.com/review or call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. MedMutual Advantage plans are HMO, HMO POS, and PPO plans offered by Medical Mutual of Ohio with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in a MedMutual Advantage plan depends on contract renewal.